This is the Marathon Training Academy podcast, episode 441.
Thanks to UCAN for sponsoring this episode. As a listener to the podcast, you can try UCAN Edge Gels for free. All you pay is the cost of shipping. Just head over to ucan.co/MTA to get the Marathon Training Academy sample pack. You can also get 20% off anything in their store with the code MTA. That's ucan.co/MTA.
Thanks also to the Tokyo Marathon charity, Room to Read, for making it possible for us to go over there and run the Tokyo Marathon. Room to Read provides books, libraries, and educational development programs for children in places around the world where there's deep poverty and educational inequality. And for just $50, you can actually educate a child for 1 year. So if you feel led to make a donation, there's still time. Over on our Room to Read charity page, you can find the link on your phone with the show notes to this episode. Just look for the link that says Room to Read. Hey, hey, welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about inspiring and empowering you to go the distance. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we bring you along with us to Japan and recap the Tokyo Marathon, learn what makes this marathon special, and hear from local runners and others in our community. And don't forget, as an Academy member, you can get access to all of our back podcast episodes. That means race recaps, interviews, all that great content. Find out how to join when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. All right, so a little quick news roundup. It seems like every year we talk about Camille Herron, who never stops, never stopping, right, Angie?
It seems like it. She is very inspiring. She recently ran 560 miles at the Lululemon Further event to set several new world records, including a new six-day record. She averaged 93.38 miles of running per day over 6 days.
And like always, we want to give some shout-outs to folks in our community before we get too far in the episode. So, Angie, what do you have for us?
We'd like to say congrats to our client Todd, who finished the Catalina Island Trail Marathon. He works with MTA coach Kerry, and he writes, quote, "This is the fastest time I have had at this race in 17 years, and this is the only marathon I have ever run with no cramping. I think it's totally due to your coaching and especially your advice about fuel and hydration. I would have never believed that hydration was the source of my cramping issue, but now I am a believer. It was an amazing day. I felt really good afterwards, and now a day later, I still feel great." Congrats to Sandrine, who we met in Tokyo. She wrote us and said, "It was an absolute pleasure meeting you both in Japan. Running the Tokyo Marathon was epic, and I got my fourth World Marathon major star there. I cannot wait to listen to the race recap podcast."
Well, this is it. We have finally put it together. Race recap. It's been a long time in coming.
We'd also like to say congrats to Selena and Sam, who we met in Tokyo. They are from Hong Kong. Selena writes, quote, "We thought we should give you a quick report on how our race turned out. Sam finished with a personal best of 4:59, his second marathon after last year's Boston, where he ran as a charity runner. As for me, given my knee injury, I stuck with a run-walk method and finished in 4 hours, 24 minutes. Hope to see you guys again in the not-so-distant future. Let us know if you do plan to come to Hong Kong." And she says, cheers, Sam and Selena. Also, shout out to Coach Antonio, who's on our team. He also ran a personal best at the Tokyo Marathon. He says, "What can I say? Impeccable organization. The weather was perfect. A flat course, and I ran a 4-minute PR in 3:16:21. This was World Marathon Major Star number 5, and London Marathon 2024 will be number 6.
Good stuff. And also one of our clients, Tyler, who works with Coach Antonio, was there, and he finished in 3:18:57 and has Boston this year. And another MTA client, Bill Drinkward, who we've had on the podcast, was at Tokyo as well and finished in 3:12:07.
That's right. He said, "This is the kindest race ever. The Japanese people are amazing on and off the course. So many smiles seen today. Thanks to Coach Steve for getting me prepared when I asked him to squeeze Tokyo into my training buildup for Boston. This was World Marathon Major Star number 5, continent number 3, and marathon number 19 complete."
Yeah, I totally agree with what he said. Japanese people are amazing on and off the course. We found that to be the case. We had such a great time going to Tokyo and Kyoto after the race. And our oldest son, Riley, got to go with us. He's 19, has a job. When he found out we were going to Japan, he's like, "Hey, can I go? I'll buy my own ticket." I'm like, "Sure, yeah." We just want you guys to know that we are that cool that our 19-year-old son wants to hang out with us.
When we go to cool places.
That's right. All right, well now it's time for one of our world famous race recaps. So this was marathon number 23 for me and world marathon major number 4. And Angie, for you it was?
Marathon number 71 and world marathon major number 5.
Yep, she just has New York City left and no plans to get it done.
Yes, I do.
Other than you just entered the lottery again.
Again, yes, for the 15th time.
So, Angie, what can we tell people about the 2024 Tokyo Marathon?
Well, the 17th edition was this year, and it was held on Sunday, March 3rd, 2024. The marathon officially began back in 2007, and it was a combination of the previously held Tokyo International Marathon and the Tokyo New York Friendship Marathon. So these two races kind of combined to make what we now know as the Tokyo Marathon. The new edition ran continuously until 2020 when, of course, there was a modified elites-only event due to the pandemic. And then the 2021 marathon was postponed until 2022, so effectively skipping a year. And international runners weren't allowed to run that year. They were deferred to 2023. This year, thankfully, no COVID precautions were in effect. And the theme of the race was Tokyo, my favorite place. And that branding could be seen everywhere. The race organizers are the Tokyo Marathon Foundation, whose mission is to change the future through the joy of running. And there were 38,000 runners registered for the event in 2024.
So we flew out of Newark, New Jersey. It was a 14-hour direct flight. It's hard for me to sit still that long, and I don't sleep well on planes. So I feel like flying there was harder than running the marathon. So we got in a couple days early so we can kind of get the lay of the land, get adjusted. I had reserved a hotel close to Tokyo Station because I wanted something central. And also, Tokyo Station is where the finish line is. So I thought we could stay at the starting line or we can stay at the finish line.
Wise choice. I always feel like I have fewer brain cells at the finish line. So it's nice to be able to get back to your hotel more quickly.
Yep.
The race offered packet pickup at the Tokyo Big Sight South Exhibition Halls on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And honestly, even though we went on Friday, this was the longest wait to get a bib that I've ever experienced, easily 30 plus minutes. But the volunteers, once you got up there, were very helpful and friendly. When we got up there, they give you a wristband to wear through race morning, along with a bib with a timing chip. And as most World Marathon Major bibs are, they're large. And the chip was particularly heavy. It was pretty weighty. And it was one of those where the chip had to be returned after the race. Now, the bib colors were different depending on your race category. For example, charity runners' bibs were pink, so we were both pink bibs. Also, charity runners got a charity shirt, and the official race shirt was an extra optional expense. So they didn't automatically give out shirts unless you requested and paid for it, which we did not. I think both of us have a drawer full of race shirts we don't wear, but they were very cool. Also, we were given a public transportation card good for 24 hours to facilitate getting around on race day, which was very helpful. And then after getting the bib and race bag and getting our chips verified, it was on to the expo, which had a large number of booths and, of course, running-related experiences. The marathon has a robust sustainability program, which I thought was really cool, given that we had just talked to Tina Muir on our last episode. And that includes using recycled fibers, recycled discarded clothing, and the water station paper cups, and they reused course tape and marathon flags. And at the expo, we visited the charity booth section to see the charity that we were running for, which was Room to Read Japan. There were a total of 39 charities involved with the marathon. They raised over 868 million yen, which is nearly 6 million US dollars.
Yeah, and if you want to hear our conversation with Room to Read, the charity we ran for, you can find that on our episode about running big city marathons. These folks are doing great work. And Room to Read, this is cool. Room to Read has benefited more than 39 million children in 23 different countries, 49,000 different communities since they started. We'd like to personally thank the following folks in our listening audience for your generous donation to Room to Read right there on our fundraising page for the Tokyo Marathon. Niall Moriarty, Mitch Goldstein, Tony Scholem, Tim Wickert, Roger Berman, Teresa Brown, Yali Sulansky, Daniela Grinnell, Julia Mitchell, Gloria Brown, Christopher Ferens, and Karen Kowalski. And like I said at the top of the show, if you want to help educate a child for 1 year, it's only $50. And there's still time. Our donation page is still up if you're hearing this. We didn't quite hit our fundraising goal. Thankfully, the Room to Read people were nice enough to still let us run. But yeah, any donations that continue to trickle in will be definitely appreciated. And you can find that link, boom, right there on your phone with the show notes to this episode. So after the race expo, we looked around. And since this is a World Marathon Major, the six-star program, you know, runners love medals, myself included. And so the Abbott World Marathon Major organization has really keyed in on this. And if you run all six World Majors, you get this other big fancy medal that symbolizes this accomplishment. And so there's like sort of a corner of the expo set up for that. And there is a lady at our meetup named Lynn, who we also met in Boston. Lynn is a marathon running machine. She's done all the World Marathon Majors twice, and she's also done all of the seven continents three times. She did a marathon on every continent, an ultra, and a half marathon. And right after the Tokyo Marathon, she flew to Barcelona and did the Barcelona Marathon. And now, you know, we're friends on Facebook. She's like somewhere else this last weekend running another marathon.
She's like the Energizer Bunny. Yeah, we had the MTA meetup on Saturday, which was a lot of fun. We met up near the Imperial Palace grounds. And although the day was cold and windy, we really had a great turnout. It was so fun to meet up with listeners from Japan, Hong Kong, the UK, and the US. So big thanks to everyone who came out and braved the cold wind.
So we stood outside under this beautiful tree. And Roger Berman, he's from the UK, but he's lived in Tokyo for 40 years, which he says makes him feel old when I say that. But he's been a big help. And Roger was there at the meetup and had a map of the course. And he gave some tips to people on how to run the course, how to execute on race day. So that was really helpful. And then whoever wanted to go, we walked around the palace grounds. There were people running all over the place doing shakeout runs. There were groups. So I said, let's do a shakeout walk. That's like my lazy version. So we did a shakeout walk. Big thanks to everyone who came out. Here's what that sounded like. Check, check, check. Hey, we're here in Tokyo with an awesome group of runners. Kind of cold today, but you know what? These runners are tough. They're tough. Bill especially is tough. I'm going to pass this around. We'll start with Bill. Tell us your name, where you're from, and what you're here to do in Tokyo.
So my name is Bill Drinkward, and I'm from Central Oregon in the U.S., and this will be World Marathon Major number 5 for me. Mostly I'm here to stalk Trevor and Angie through all the races this year that they're doing, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, because you'll be at
a great year. Yeah, running not just Tokyo, but White Mountains, and running the Alps, and maybe Berlin too, I think.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, so I'll see more of two of my heroes here.
You get lots of punches on his punch card.
That's right.
Hi, my name is Christine, and I'm from Hong Kong. This is my first marathon in Tokyo. So I have a kind of mixed feelings right now, excited and anxious, and I will try my best to enjoy the race and hope we'll be able to finish within 7 hours.
Yeah, you have what it takes.
Hi, my name's Albert. I'm from Hong Kong as well. I'm going to come here to support Christine to run her first marathon and to support all the runners. Run the best, get the best record for all you guys.
Yeah.
Hi everyone, I'm Samuel. Also from Hong Kong, we are friends of Albert and Christine and Selena. Tomorrow I'll be running. This is my second marathon. Yeah, and I've been listening to MTA for the last 2 years, so really enjoy the show and know Trevor and Angie coming out. So really happy about that.
Yeah, hi, my name is Selena. I'm from Hong Kong. Sam's my husband. This is my first time running the Tokyo Marathon, the fifth of the six World Majors. So I'm really excited to be able to have this get-together. Last time was with Trevor and Angie, 2019, New York. The world has changed a lot, so I think it's just great to see you both again and the rest of the Academy members. And yes, we love MTA.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I agree with that. We love MTA. And I'm Lynn from San Francisco, California, and this is my fifth star and my third round World Marathon Majors. I get my third six-star medal in London. I am also a stalker, and I met Angie and Trevor first time in Boston, and I work my schedule around that so I can see them. And I love MTA. Go MTA!
Hi, this is Tyler. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. This is my first time in Japan. This will be my 10th marathon and my fifth star. first time with the MTA group, and lucky enough to meet my coach, Antonio, who's next.
Talking about Antonio. Okay, this is Antonio. I'm an MTA coach. This will be marathon number 24, fifth major, got London in 7 weeks. From Miami, Florida, so it's a little cooler today than would have wanted, but we'll figure it out tomorrow. What else? Trying to finish, hopefully break 3:20 tomorrow. We'll see if I'm not quite up to the task, but hopefully I can.
I'm Nick, I'm from Sussex in the UK, and I'm not running tomorrow, and I'm very pleased about that. But I am always totally in awe of anybody who ever runs a marathon anywhere, so it's always great to see people. I'm here to support, mainly to provide navigation services and banking services, and mainly encouragement.
Hi, my name's Janie. I'm from Sussex in the UK. My first time in Japan, super excited to be here. This will be my fifth star, my 19th marathon with my sixth, hopefully, at Boston in April. Thank you to MTA. You've got me through many a long run. I'm very, very grateful. Lovely to meet you.
Hi, I'm Mary. I'm from Ocala, Florida. This is my sixth star and my 10th marathon, a 10-year journey. And I have been listening to MTA for probably the 10 years. And Angie, you really resonated with me, your story, things you've gone through personally that you've shared, and your health and fitness journey. I connected with that a lot, and you got me through a lot of long runs and changed my life. So thank you.
Hi, my name is Letty. I'm also living in Florida, so I'm also freezing right now. So, you know, that means we have to run fast tomorrow. This is going to be my fifth star. My last one is London. I have to move there to, you know, get in because it's so hard. And I'm going to challenge everyone. I am the biggest MTA fan, so.
Hi, I'm Glenn, originally from New York. I've been in Japan for 25 years. I've done Tokyo Marathon twice. I won't be running tomorrow. I'll be at the six-star booth, so maybe I'll be giving you your star tomorrow. So just happy to meet Trevor and Angie and listen to your podcast on lots of long runs. So great to have you guys here.
Hi, I'm Roger. I've lived here for 40 years, and it's great to see Angie and Trevor and Riley. The son here in Japan for the first time. I've been a long-term MTA listener. And Coach Lin, hi Coach Lin. Thank you for getting me to my PB at London Marathon 2019, where I met Angie and Trevor for the first time. And I will just say that MTA works, coaching works, because you have to be accountable. And the accountability, having a coach is brilliant.
Thank you so much. Okay, I'm here with Janie Perry from the UK. Okay, you've had a hip replacement, yet you still got faster in the marathon, you told me, right?
I've been so lucky. I've been in pain for a very long time. And then eventually it was discovered that I was born with hip dysplasia. Mm. So basically my hips were wonky. And so I had a total hip replacement in 2021. I was very lucky. I found a surgeon who was so pro running afterwards.
Yeah.
And I was really careful with my rehab. And then with his blessing, I ran the London Marathon 6 months afterwards.
Wow.
And run my PB since.
That's amazing. And you're also a nutritionist.
I am. I'm a nutritional therapist. I do various things, but sports nutrition is something I love as well. So I'm big into my nutrition.
As a sports nutritionist, do you have any kind of strategy before you go into a marathon?
Definitely fueling well beforehand. Those 3 days beforehand, really focusing on good carbs, good breakfast, get that gel in just on the start line, and fueling every 20 minutes all the way through, drinking lots of water, getting your electrolytes in, and then recover well.
Nice. So do you have a website or social media handle or anything we can tell people about?
So I'm at Janie Perry Wellness. My website's janieperry.co.uk.
So do you got any goals for tomorrow?
I
just have fun.
Yeah, do you know, it always, for me, I never know until I get to mile 18, 19, 20 how it's going to go. It's such a privilege to be here.
Oh, yeah.
I just look forward to getting to the finish line.
Well, Janie, thank you for being a listener of the podcast.
Trevor, I just have to say, I love MTA. You got me through so many a long run. And it's such a privilege to meet you, Trevor and Angie, and your son. And thank you for being there. I keep going with those wonderful podcasts.
Well, it's great to meet your husband, Nick.
Yep, he's here supporting me, my good old husband, my long-suffering marriage.
He's funny. He's like, I'm logistics support and banking support.
Yeah, always useful.
All right, big thanks to everyone who came to the MTA meetup. It's just great energy, just what I needed before marathon day, which was the next day. So let's take it to race day, Angie. We get up in the morning and make our way to the starting line.
Yeah, we took the trains there, which is very convenient. Of course, there was a lot of other runners on the trains that morning, so you kind of just start following the herd.
Yep.
The starting area was enormous, but thankfully it was well marked and it was manned by helpful volunteers. Entry to the starting area was allowed from 7 a.m. to 8:45 a.m. with a very strict 8:45 a.m. cutoff.
Which, of course, means Angie wants to get there at 7.
Exactly.
The security checkpoint was actually quite a long line as well.
Yes. The first step was to go through there. They checked any bags that you had, made sure you were wearing the wristband they had given you at the expo. There was also a strict list of items that were prohibited past security, as well as limitations to what you wore on race day. So if you're running the race, make sure you read through the race booklet that they helpfully email you before the race, because there were a lot more guidelines, restrictions than, you know, a lot of races that I've run. So for example, they didn't want you taking water bottles, especially plastic water bottles, through the start with more than a few ounces of liquid in them. Also, like as far as race day, there were limitations on what you wore. They didn't really want you wearing any shirts that were advertising things that were non-running related, anything that would be offensive, any kind of costumes that would be a tripping hazard or obstruct other people. There was just like very detailed guidelines, I guess.
No political or religious slogans. And you can run in a costume. In fact, I didn't see too many people doing it. I did see one guy as running as a minion. But I remember one thing in the rules that said, no running with swords.
Sounds like a good guideline.
So you can go as a samurai, but just don't have a sword.
That's right. They did want you to 100% run with your phone in case there were any like emergency updates they wanted to give you communication wise. And a lot of times I don't run with my phone. So I made sure I had it with me since that was one of the things that was especially pointed out. The gear check trucks were next and they corresponded to the designation on your race bib. So you'd look on your bib and see the exact truck that you took your stuff to. So that was well organized. Finally, there were lots of the cleanest porta pots I've ever encountered during a race. Now, different, you know, especially large events, they can get pretty gnarly, just general hygiene issues. But these were next level. And there were actually volunteers organizing the bathroom lines to make sure they ran efficiently. There were people who were like pointing to the open porta pots, like, you're next in line, go. It was amazing. I was very, very impressed. And then after the bathrooms, there was an additional walk to get to the correct block or corral. The corrals were designated from A to M. I was in G and Trevor, you were in H. Is that correct?
I was way back there.
And then there was a little water station before you got to your corrals, along with trash receptacles and places to put any throwaway gear. They did not want you just randomly putting throwaway gear on the course, so there was designated areas for that. The starting corrals were crowded, as is customary during large marathons. And they had the usual energy of excitement and nerves that was kind of palpable. Thankfully, it was a clear morning, near perfect temperatures. It was in the 30s Fahrenheit, around 2 degrees Celsius at the start. And as the day wore on, it got up into the 50s Fahrenheit, about 12 degrees Celsius. So it was definitely an ideal day for the marathon. It wasn't as windy and cold as the day before, so that was perfect.
Now, as you probably know, this is a race with very strict cutoffs, so it's kind of stressful for people at the back of the pack, and there's a 7-hour cutoff, but if you're in one of the back corrals, by the time you cross the starting mat, 30 minutes could already transpire.
Yeah, in fact, they state in the handbook that runners had to be at least 19 years of age for the marathon and be capable of completing the race within 6 hours and 30 minutes. So like you said, Trevor, the wheelchair race started first at 9:05 a.m., and then the general race started at 9:10, but it could be 20, 30 minutes before you cross that start line, and the clock is running all the time with that 7-hour cutoff going. I want to emphasize this. If you only remember one thing, the cutoff times are very strict. There are 8 cutoff locations besides the finish line, and you won't be able to talk your way past the cutoff. They like stretch a rope across the course, and there's like trucks there. They're like shuttling people onto the trucks. When I was out on the course, there was an out and back section, and I saw the cutoff being set up just before the half marathon point. And they were literally stretching a rope across the road, and you know, the buses were descending, and I saw people behind that and just feeling so bad for them.
Yeah.
Speaking of volunteers, there were over 10,000 volunteers that were involved in making the marathon smooth and successful, and 5,000 of those volunteers were out along the course. I found the course to be very well marked. They had distance markers every kilometer as well as every mile. And the course is nearly flat. It really has the potential for being fast. I say potential because it's a crowded course, which means that you have to run strategically if you want a PR and make sure you're in the correct corral. The highest elevation is at the start, which is 131.2 feet or 40 meters. And then there's a gradual downhill until about 5K when the course levels out through the rest of the race with just the slightest hills throughout. And it finishes at nearly sea level.
It's a point-to-point course. So you start in front of the Tokyo Metropolitan Government Building in Shinjuku. Then you run through like well-known areas in Tokyo like Kanda, Nihonbashi, Asakusa, where they have a famous temple, the Senzoji Temple, which is actually, it dates back to AD 628. It's one of the most significant Buddhist temples in the world. 30 million visitors a year visit that temple. You run through Ginza, finally go over a cobblestone street about a mile long, and conclude at a finish line near Tokyo Station. So that's just kind of a quick overview of the course. Tokyo is a huge city. You know, we were there 4 nights, barely scratched the surface.
That's right. But I really feel like they did a good job of including a lot of the contrast to the city in the course. There's a lot of out and back sections, which can be pretty entertaining because then you get to see all the runners who were either going out or coming back. At one point, I got to see the elite women who were running. So that was really cool. And yeah, it's just a lot to see and a great way to experience the city. So Trevor, since we didn't get to run together, tell me about your race.
We don't ever run together, do we?
Rarely.
You're faster than me, so that's understandable. And in a marathon, I think we both just like to get in our head.
Yeah, we're not really like the type who need like a lot of handholding, maybe.
Yeah. No, I had a great time. I mean, I love Japan. I'm definitely going to be going back. I want to do some other races there. I want to find a trail marathon in the mountains. They got some legit mountains in Japan. But anyway, I got into my corral and I got to see one of our longtime listeners, Leslie Rogers, who lives in Tokyo. So that was fun. Interestingly, you know, I've been to a lot of races and they typically play music over the speakers to get people amped up. Then they make announcements and, you know, usually it's like rock music, no matter what country you go to. Well, here, the music was weird. It was like a children's choir singing. Maybe it was like the theme song of the Tokyo Marathon. A lot of things have theme songs over there. Like every subway stop has its own little theme song. So it sounded like something similar to that.
If anyone knows what the music is, let us know.
Yeah. It was just kind of weird. Felt like, okay, maybe we're all going to bow to the emperor now. And then once the race started, there was a guitar solo. And when you walk in front of the speakers, it was like really shrill and really loud.
It was loud by the speakers. I actually repositioned myself in the corral to be away from them because I was like, whoa, it's too early in the morning for that.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny. So yeah, it took me 23 minutes to cross the starting line once the race started. And they go by gun time, not chip time.
All right, here we go.
So then, you know, gotta move. So I ran the first half really without any stops. So I enjoyed the sights and sounds along the course. Lots of volunteers. Everything is marked well with signs in Japanese and English. I got to the halfway point and then I stopped to take a pee, and that cost me about 7 minutes because the line was pretty long and I kept eyeballing these lines as I was going, like, let me see if the next one's better. Let me see if the next one's. And they pretty much use the public bathrooms that are just already in the city. And sometimes they send you out quite a ways from the course to go use it and then run back. So you can really add distance on. And there was even one time I saw where they were sending people down into the subway underground.
Wow, I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
When I stopped about mile 10, thankfully it was like a really short line. But then I stopped again about mile 20, and that was like another like at least 5 minute stop.
Hey look, it's Tokyo Tower.
It's about mile 11 and a half. Feeling good.
So, of course, I took lots of pictures and got some video clips. I was not in shape to run the whole time. You know, like I said, I've been kind of lazy in my training. No big surprise to all of you listening. In fact, we have an episode that we released last year called The Lazy Runner's Guide to Success. That was actually a really popular episode. I share all my lazy tips, how I can still run marathons, being a guy who doesn't like to exercise that much. So I finished my half marathon, and then I came up with this mantra. You know how you get inspiration when you're out there? And the mantra was that I just ran a half marathon. Now I'm going to do a recovery half, which basically gives myself permission to walk.
That's a smart way to do it.
A half marathon with a long 21-kilometer cooldown. So that was how I approached it.
And then you got to see Riley out on the course, didn't you?
Yeah, I was running. I was moving along. I almost said running, but I was just moving at that point. And he texts me, says, "Hey, I'm here." And so I start looking around and boom, I see him. He had taken the subway all the way to that spot and had found me using the iPhone person finder thing that we could see each other's location. So he found me, and that was fun to see him on the course. I remember there wasn't a water stop for like maybe the first 5K.
Yeah, the first aid station was at 5K.
So I'm running along and there's this lady from the US. She looked to be older and she's running with her husband or her friend. And she says to him, "Jim, where's the water? I can't run a marathon without water."
Good question.
But after that, I think the aid stations were in good intervals.
Yeah, there were 15 total. The first one, like you said, was at 5K. And to try and ease the congestion at aid stations, the last number on your race bib corresponded with the drink table that you were supposed to take aid from. Although they weren't limiting what table you could take from. I tried in the beginning, and then sometimes it'd be too crowded. I would take one farther down. I think it was just, to ease the congestion. All aid stations had water. Half of them had the sports drink, which was Pocari Sweat. And there were various food options out there, including bananas, pickled plum, not so typical, chocolate, sweet jellied adzuki bean paste. Yeah, that was a first. Cream-filled rolls.
Oh, those were good.
Calorie Mate jelly, glucose, salty hard candy, and doll-shaped pancakes. So what did you take advantage of out there?
The cream-filled rolls. That was in the later miles.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a tasty delight. The pickled plum was not a wise decision for me. Did you try that?
I decided I was going to attempt to try everything. So I did try everything except for the Calorie Mate jelly, which thankfully I didn't, because I tried it later and was not palatable for me. But a lot of things I just like would take a bite and then find the nearest garbage can and be like, okay, I tried it, you know. But the cream-filled rolls, that kind of hit the spot. And those salty hard candies were good.
It's interesting when you do these international races how each country has its own sports drink. Sports drink industry must be doing pretty well. Like here, Angie mentioned they had Pocari Sweat. Of course, we try not to leave anything to chance on race day. So when we travel, we take UCAN Edge gels because that's what has worked for us for like over 10 years. We've been taking UCAN. We started with their drink mix, which you mix in water, and then their energy bars, which we still use. And now their Edge gels, which are so convenient and work so well. So I actually took 4 Edge gels and I took about 1 hour.
Yep.
Shout out to UCAN. You guys have gotten me through many a race and long run.
Yeah, I think the thing I love about UCAN, I carried 4 of the Edge gels as well, which were great. But they're so easy on the stomach. They provide consistent energy, but it doesn't prevent you from trying other food option, fueling options out on the course if you feel like, you know, you want to try it. It's not like you need it, but you're like, oh, I want to taste this. I want to see what this is like. And it's not like there's going to be an interaction and it's going to, the UCAN works in tandem with everything. And so it's just an amazing option.
Yeah, that's a good point, because some of those other gels, they don't play well with others. And of course, we've got a little discount offer for you guys. If you want to try UCAN Edge gels, you can get a free sample pack. Just pay for the shipping. Go to ucan.co/MTA. And if you're a returning customer, always use our little code. You'll get 20% off with the code MTA. It's ucan.co/MTA. Here's something else I noticed in Japan. In Japan, they're not as big on physical contact. It's a culture where you bow, you don't shake hands. There wasn't a lot of people standing on the course, spectating, giving high fives. There were some, and you know, some of them had like gloves on. But since it's not a culture where you like touch strangers, there wasn't as many high five givers. Did you notice that?
I did, yeah. It kind of stuck out when there would be. I was like, oh, that's unusual.
Yeah.
As opposed to a lot of races where just like multiple people have their hands out to, you know, slap your hand.
But the spectators were still out in full and giving lots of energy to us runners.
Of course, in addition to aid stations, no race is complete without medical stations. There were 15 of them along the course. And something that was new to me, they were called run doctors. And they're doctors that run along specific sections of the course. They're like wearing this vest that says run doctor on it.
So with these running doctors, you can get first aid and keep running while you're getting it, and it doesn't affect your time.
I don't know about that, but... They didn't give out some of the typical things that you often see at Western races, you know, like the topical muscle creams or like analgesics or things like that. But there was a section along the course where I guess just spectators had this like body muscle pain relieving spray that they were offering to people. So they were just getting sprayed with.
Well, there was a whole station you can go through and get sprayed.
Exactly.
And then lots of spectators would spray. You just pull over and, you know, point to what body part you wanted sprayed. And the person would spray you.
Still here, doing my cool down half marathon. So you can go in there and get your muscles sprayed. Apparently it's pretty popular. Okay, there's the dreaded cutoff. You gotta make it here by 3:15. Arigato!
So were there any points that the race got really hard for you?
Well, marathon's always hard. You got to keep grinding it out, but not really. I think the weather was great. It wasn't like too hot. There's no uphills to deal with. I did see some of those final checkpoints. For example, the last checkpoint was at 37.8. And if you didn't make it by 3:15 p.m., your race is over. And then there's an out and back past that. And after running a ways on that out and back, it was a long stretch. I knew that the people I was seeing on the other side of the road, they had 15 minutes to make it to that checkpoint. And some of them were walking. And I thought, you know, it's like a mile to that checkpoint. I don't think they're going to make it. So it was kind of sad, you know, seeing the look on those people's faces and the look in their eyes and just sort of this dread that, oh, I might not finish this race and get a medal.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, this is the last kilometer on this cobblestone. All right. There's the finish line.
So I made it to the finish line and got my medal. But yeah, I had a great time and loved it. You know, it's just like it was an enjoyable jaunt through the city of Tokyo. It was awesome. How did your race go?
It was, I mean, considering the circumstances, it was good. I went into it with pretty low expectations. My training, as maybe I've talked about a couple times on previous episodes, did not go according to plan. I was kind of plagued with hamstring issues off and on, and then just weird ankle pain. And so in the, I think, 8 weeks previous to the marathon, the longest run I was able to do was 8 miles.
Wow.
And so I had pretty low confidence going in, although that was tempered with the fact that I've done 70 marathons. Like, I know I can gut it out. It
yeah.
may not be pretty. It'll probably be painful. And so I think my main goals going in were to obviously finish under the cutoff time and to be injury free. So, or at least not exacerbate anything.
Yeah.
So I had a similar strategy to you. I ran through the half marathon point. My hamstring had started to kind of cramp up. I have a partial labrum tear in my proximal hamstring. My sports medicine doctor said, you know, you can do what you want, but you just have to listen to your body and the symptoms. If they start to act up, then you need to dial it back. So at that point, I basically did mostly walking for the second half of the race, you know, threw in a few running intervals. So, you know, there's times when my mind did kind of feel like, you know, you can compare yourself to past races where I would have been done a long time ago. And if you start playing that comparison game, it can be a bit challenging. But I would say generally, I just really enjoyed the beautiful weather. It was a great marathon course. There was a lot of fun things to see. And the fact that you can be participating in a marathon, it's a privilege. And even though my fitness was not where I wanted it to be, I was thankful that I was able to be out there So I finished in 5:42:13, and I would say overall that I really enjoyed the marathon.
Well, when you've done as many marathons as you have and have run for as long as you have, you're going to go through a lot of ups and downs.
Yes.
Something Steve Bourne said to us a long time ago, he said, sometimes you're the swimmer, other times you're the lifeguard.
Right.
And that's okay. You know, it's all about just enjoying the miles, right?
Yeah, and sometimes in the midst of pursuing or completing a goal, you're not going to enjoy certain sections of it. I've definitely had marathons where I have thought during it, like, why didn't I pick a different hobby? Or I promised myself I'm never going to do another marathon after I finish this one. So if your mind starts to go to a dark place, don't think like, oh, what's wrong with me? I should be positive all the time. You know, just kind of accept the thoughts and feelings that you're having and then try to reframe it and focus on, you know, some kind of mantra that's worked for you in the past. Put on some music that pumps you up. Do whatever you need to do to just keep going.
Yeah, speaking of music, I had a killer playlist, like heavy metal and, you know, stoner metal and all this music that whenever we listen to it in the car together, Angie says it gives her a headache. I felt like the story going on in my head as I was running was like really positive. I can almost see myself in a movie in a way. Like it doesn't feel real. And then before you know it, you know, you've covered a lot of miles.
You're the hero in your own movie.
I'm a legend in my own mind. That's kind of what a marathon is like, this epic saga. You're starting out on this incredible long journey, you know, especially if we go rewind back all the way to when you started training.
Which is really when the journey begins.
Yeah. And you're going to have to face some enemies in the form of like doubts and fears and maybe injury. And then everything climaxes where there's this final battle, which could be how you fight yourself out there on the course and push through to the finish, which is the, you know, conclusion of the story, where you finally get a medal around your neck and you get to sit down. Speaking of which, let's talk about the finish area.
Yeah, we mentioned that the finish area is kind of between the Imperial Palace grounds and the Tokyo Station. So there's kind of this park area, and it was pretty labyrinthine. I mean, just once you cross the finish line, you had to walk a good ways before even getting the race medal, which I was kind of like, where's the medal? Then they gave you a bag and water and sports drink and a calorie replacement paste, which was a very poor substitute for post-race food, in my opinion. There was no other food. And I'm always finish races starving, especially when it takes me that long out there. And so getting that was a bit of a letdown, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, let's say that again. Calorie replacement paste. Does that sound appetizing?
Yeah, so that was a bit of a letdown because I am into the food. They also had heat sheets available, although it was a fairly warm day. And then they had a special terry cloth hooded finisher's cape, which was awesome. And they were very distinctive. You could see people all over, you know, wearing their hooded finisher's cape. And then for me, it took me a while to get back to Tokyo Station because of road closures and our hotel was near there. But eventually I did prevail. So
it took me a while also after I crossed the finish line to walk all the way to where they're handing out medals. I got to see Glenn, one of our listeners there. He's volunteering. He had a sign pointing people where to go to get their 6-star medal. And people were asking him tons of questions about how to find this and find that. And he's like, you know, I'm just here holding the sign. I don't know. And then our hotel was on the other side of the train station, but all the roads were closed. By the way, once you get to the train station to try to figure out how to get through it, that took us a couple tries the day before. Every train station in Japan that we went to has this huge mall. It has a huge mall underground because there's a really strong gift-giving culture in Japan. I've been reading about this. Whenever you go somewhere on vacation, you bring back a little gift for people in your office, people who were holding the fort down, allowing you to go have this nice vacation. They were back stuck working. So it's custom and respectful to bring a little gift back. So the word is omiyagi, and it basically means souvenirs. And most of the time, these little souvenirs that you bring your coworkers and your family are edible, like little treats. So that explains why we were walking all around Tokyo and we kept seeing this great snack food, and each thing would be individually wrapped inside the bigger package. I'm like, man, they sure have a lot of packaging on their food. But the reason is because you can buy like a dozen of something and then each one's individually wrapped in a tasteful way, and you can put that on each of your coworkers' desk as a little omiyagi. So as you're walking through the train station, you're going past all these little souvenir shops. I got back to the hotel, finally made it. You were already back, had showered, and were relaxing in bed. And I don't think you even got up until the next morning.
Yeah, I was so tired that after I laid down, I did not pretty much move. I didn't even eat dinner that night.
I, on the other hand, went bar hopping. I'll talk about that in a minute. First, quick facts about this year's Tokyo Marathon.
Yes, there were 117 elite men participating in the race, along with 51 elite women. The oldest male entrant was 89 years old, and the oldest woman was 82. The Tokyo Marathon, of course, we've talked about, is one of the six Abbott World Marathon majors. And as of early this year, there have been nearly 13,000 six-star finishers. Generally, the Tokyo Marathon has a 95% finish rate. Historically, the gender ratio for the marathon is around 75% men and 25% women. It was interesting to see later that Joan Benoit Samuelson was one of the six-star finishers 45 years after winning her first World Marathon major in Boston. And she said, "I'm blessed to have longevity in this sport. It doesn't owe me anything, but I feel I owe my sport." So that was cool to see her complete that. In the wheelchair race, the first place man was Suzuki Tomoki in 1:23:05. And the first place woman was Manuela Schaar of Switzerland in a time of 1:40:10. In the men's marathon, first place was Benson Caputo, age 32, of Kenya. He finished in 2:02:16, setting a new course record by 24 seconds. He has also won Boston in 2021 and Chicago in 2022. And unfortunately, Eliud Kipchoge, who is an amazing runner, had an off day. He was dropped from the lead pack at about 20 kilometers and finished 10th in 2:06:50.
All right. What about the top Japanese runner?
That was Yusuke Nishiyama. He finished 9th, but sadly didn't get the final spot to go to the Paris Olympics because his time was about a minute too slow to make the 2:05:50 cutoff. On the women's side of things, first place was Satumi Asefa Kabidi, age 29, of Ethiopia. She won her first Tokyo Marathon in 2:15:55, breaking the record of the fastest finish time and a new course record. And she smiled at the unexpected result, saying afterwards, quote, "I am very happy. I hadn't thought about breaking the course record until the halfway point." So even sometimes the elites, they don't know what they're capable of. And the top Japanese runner, Hitomi Naia, was in sixth place.
Incredible athletes. Yeah, so I had a full day there in Tokyo after I got back to the hotel, took a shower, rested a bit, and then went out to meet up with some fellow runners. It was a little get-together that Glenn, he organized this little meetup at a really good brewery, craft brewery. And I want to play the soundbite from that because there's some really fun stories. And also a little bit about Japanese running culture. Of course, running is huge in Japan and it has been for a long time. And there is a unique team building relay race called Ekiden. And instead of passing a baton like relay races over in the US, they actually, the runners wear a sash across their chest and they pass that sash from person to person. And the relays cover like incredible distances. We're talking like over 200 kilometers. Sometimes they're multi-day. So I had a fun time sitting around the table with these locals and they also taught me some Japanese words. So I'm gonna play that clip for you, but really quick, I'd like to say thanks to our sponsor, AG1. When we travel, we take these AG1 travel packs with us. The same packs you can actually get free with your first purchase. You can get 5 free travel packs. We believe it's the best nutritional supplement out there because instead of having like 25 different bottles, AG1 has all this good stuff packed right in there. Vitamins, minerals, nutrients, whole food sourced ingredients. If you give it a try, you can get 5 free travel packs and a 1-year supply of vitamin D3 K2 with your first purchase.
Yeah, it's the first thing I take in the morning here at home as well as on the road. And in fact, marathon morning definitely had my AG1. I'm sure it was one of the key factors why I had decent energy during the race. And thankfully didn't get sick during the trip too. So it really helps support the immune system. It's something that we have, you know, we give to our kids, we have recommended to family members, and of course here on the podcast. So check it out. Go to drinkag1.com/MTA. That's drinkag1.com/MTA.
83%.
Okay.
Okay, we're here with some Japanese runners and locals here in Tokyo. We're at Devil Craft Brewery. That sounds ominous. But the beer is great. I'm having this oatmeal stout. It tastes like a smoked beer. So, Glenn, thanks for arranging this.
My pleasure.
We're here after the Tokyo Marathon today, and I just met a friend, Hideo. He's also big into ultras and was telling me a story about a 100-miler?
A 200-miler.
Okay, a 200-miler in Italy. Yep. He got
500 meters to the finish, right?
It's about a mile to the finish. I got bitten by a snake.
Okay, say that one more time.
I got bitten by a snake on my ankle about a mile from the finish.
Did you sit down on a rock or something? The snake bit you?
Well, we're sort of coming into the town in the finish. It's a mountain race, and we're going downhill. So
yeah.
I sort of thought to myself, well, it's probably easier for me to go down into the town than the doctor to come up to me. So I thought, well, I'll just carry on and see how it goes.
Yeah.
About half a mile from the finish, my tongue and lips started swelling up. A bit further, my eyes started swelling up. And a bit after that, I found it difficult to breathe. So I was sort of going into anaphylactic shock, apparently, because I was allergic. It wasn't a venomous snake, but I was allergic to snake bite or something.
Wow. You don't know what kind of snake it was, though.
No, because the I know people say when you get bitten by a snake, you should look at the snake. But the first thing when you get that pain in your ankle, and it felt like somebody had stuck a knitting needle into my ankle,
huh,
was you look at your ankle to see if it's still all right. And you don't think about snakes. So,
yeah.
So I've no idea. I mean, it could have been
plus
a tiny little snake.
You would just run 199 miles. So
yeah, I've been running for 6 days. I maybe had about 10 hours sleep over the whole week. So, yeah, it was a bit intense.
Okay, so then what happened next?
So I was running with a Portuguese friend of mine. I said to him, look, can you just go to the finish and tell the doctor to come back to me because I think I might be in a spot of bother here.
Hey, your English is great, but it's too British.
And then about 500 metres from the finish, I blacked out. And I woke up with all these Italian guys sort of pouring water on me saying, it's okay, you've only got 500 metres and you've still got, you know, 4 hours to the cutoff, you can make it. So I thought, great, and, you know, I staggered up, probably took maybe two or three steps, and I blacked out again.
Mm.
And the next time I woke up, they sort of said, look, the doctor's coming, just stay there. And the doctor came along and she sort of looked at me and stuff and said, well, we can either treat you here, but that would be the end of your race. And I was thinking, I've been running for 6 days.
Yeah.
That's only 500 meters. And so, she said, or we can treat you after you cross the finish line. So I said to her, does that mean I'm not going to die? And she said, I'm not saying that.
So you crossed the finish line?
Sort of. I had two people basically propping me up and literally just dragged me across the finish line. And there's an ambulance waiting. They shoved me straight into the ambulance. And I thought they were just going to take me to hospital. But the next thing I knew, they sort of said, oh, can you get up?
Mm.
And they put me into an air ambulance helicopter. And I remember taking off. And then I was unconscious. And the next time I opened my eyes, I was in the hospital. So I missed the only time I'd been in a helicopter. You know, I don't even remember what kind of the helicopter was. Yeah.
Does anyone have a running story that can top that?
Nah.
That's great, man. Let's talk about the Tokyo Marathon. I'm an expert on it now. I just finished it.
Your favorite part of the course?
I'd like to know.
Who is this talking right
sorry.
Here? Who is this?
Sorry.
You got to introduce yourself.
Oh, this is Leslie. I'm a longtime MTA listener and Tokyo resident from America, but living in Japan. And I would like to know what your favorite part of the course was, visually, as far as the sights along the way.
Pretty soon after we started, we ran through kind of a big shopping district.
Yeah.
It looked like it was right out of a video game.
Oh.
with all these neon signs and stuff. So what part was that you said?
South Shinjuku, yeah.
Okay.
What do you think of Japan so far?
I'm in love with Japan. This has been amazing. I'm so impressed with how clean everything is, first of all. I didn't know you weren't supposed to eat when you walk around. There was a little card in our hotel room that said, it is forbidden to eat while you walk around outside.
Forbidden is a stretch.
Yeah, okay.
Not recommended.
Yeah.
Not polite.
So we were walking around the day before the marathon, and I forget where we were. There's so many snacks here. Bought one, and then I started eating it, and Angie looked at me and said, breaking the rules. So then I found an alley to go in there and in this dark alley to eat it and hide my shame.
What was the weirdest thing you got given at the marathon to in terms of eating and stuff like that?
Kilometer 38. I'm feeling like I should probably be careful what I eat, but I saw a pickled plum. And I'm like, well, this is interesting. I got to try it. As soon as I put it in my mouth, I got this nausea, right? This
umeboshi.
What is it?
It's called umeboshi.
Okay.
Yeah. Literally pickled plum. Yes.
If I wasn't running, you know, if I just had it on a salad or something, I probably would have liked it, but that was a little weird.
I have a question.
What feel the Japanese omotenashi?
Oh, omotenashi means like the concept of service with all your heart.
So Japanese style hospitality.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I love it. That's another thing that is really enchanting about Japan. What's that word one more time?
Omotenashi.
Okay. I'm never going to remember that.
It was the famous Japanese presentation to the Olympic Committee. They said, why pick Japan? Omotenashi.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that in Japan.
I could see that. Every time, I go into my hotel, I'm greeted with a polite bow. And everywhere, restaurants. I do notice that they put these kind of banners in the doorway. So you kind of bow when you enter the restaurant. And then the staff see you and they all greet you in unison. Some of these places.
Yeah. They say, Irashaimase.
What does that mean?
Welcome.
Okay.
Well, it makes sense.
Yes.
Here's probably my favorite story of the marathon. So obviously a marathon's hard. It's tough in the last kilometer. And when I crossed, there was a Japanese guy who crossed the finish line right next to me. And then he stopped, turned around, he looked at the finish line, and he bowed.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, that's the most Japanese thing I've seen in Japan. Showing respect for the course.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel that. It almost choked me up seeing that. Like, because a marathon does deserve respect. You got to respect the distance, as the coaches say, right?
Yeah. It's the same spirit as a karate practitioner or judoka would show as they step off the mat after a competition. They'll turn and they'll bow to the mat to show respect.
You see that especially a lot with triathlons, don't you? A lot of the Japanese triathletes.
I haven't seen it so much in triathlons. I've seen it more in marathons.
Okay.
I really haven't seen it in triathlons.
Okay.
Glenn is our resident triathlete.
Nice.
The old days.
Glenn, you mentioned the best and worst thing about living in Japan.
Oh yeah, it was just a joke. But the best part of Japan is that there are a lot of rules and people follow them. Which means orderly society. Yeah. The worst part of Japan is there are a lot of rules and people follow them. Which means for an inflexible society.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So there's good and bad points of that.
We were walking around yesterday, and there's a certain Japanese relay race that you were explaining how it works.
Oh, Ekiden.
Okay.
Ekiden. Is very, very famous in Japan. Do you know how we have football on New Year's Day?
Yeah.
Ekiden is American football in Japan. Everybody
watches. Not the Super Bowl, but the Rose Bowl or the holiday games.
Ekiden is basically a relay race. The most famous one is the Hakone Ekiden, and those are university students, and it takes place on the 2nd and 3rd of January, and they each run about 20 Ks. Then the next day, they run back. They start in Tokyo.
And then they go out to the rural mountainous area.
Yes,
in Hakone.
Yes. So the...
And then the second they come back.
Yeah, they have a mountain section, which is quite tough. Everybody watches it.
The most famous part of the Ekiden, when every runner finishes his segment, he collapses. They have to give everything they have for the Ekiden. They literally collapse. If they don't collapse, then they probably didn't work hard enough.
It's not like the Kenyans getting past the finish line and just, done.
Yeah.
They've got to show, the Japanese university students, Ekiden runners, they've got to show they died.
Wow.
At the viewpoint of the Japanese likes the kizuna,
bonds.
Bonds. So
strong bonds.
It appears the Ekiden, so some participant relay the
Tusky.
So it's a little bit.
It's like a baton.
Yeah, baton.
It's like a cloth baton.
It's very important to bond all members so to achieve the one goal. So it's a Japanese traditional.
So yeah,
I wonder. I wonder how far back it goes.
And what's your name?
My name is Junko.
Yeah.
Junko.
Yeah.
Hakone Ekiden started in 1920.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's important to show that, Americans think of running as a solitary sport, but in Japan it's a team sport.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun meeting up with all those folks. After the marathon, it was just like a perfect ending to the day.
And as we're leaving, I had to go find my subway stop to get back to the hotel. And Glenn, he had to go to the same stop. So he's like, here, follow me. And as we're leaving, Roger says, see you next time, Trevor. Hey, by the way, don't let Glenn take you to another bar, because I was pretty tired.
I can't imagine how you had energy to be out there. Yeah. Like I said, I was long asleep.
I was still adjusted to U.S. time, so it felt like I should be sleeping. So Glenn, he's like, let me just take you to this really fun little local place I ever like really quick. You know,
of course you don't say no.
It was fun. Yeah, we went to this little bar where no one spoke English. And Glenn was telling people that I had just run the Tokyo Marathon. And everyone's eyes go really big, like, whoa. Like, wow, these people are easy to impress. And then I still had my finisher's medal in my pocket. So I pulled that out and their eyes got even bigger. Whoa.
Oh, that's funny.
Good times. Hey, and if you want to meet up with us at a future event, we're going to be at a couple places. Coming up quick will be the Revel White Mountain Marathon and Half in Conway, New Hampshire. I'll also be at the Berlin Marathon this year. So if you're going to be there, shoot me an email, trevor@marathontrainingacademy.com, or there's a contact form on our website. I'll also be at the Košice Marathon in Slovakia. And then Angie and I will be in France this summer as well in July. And I'll probably be back, I haven't fully confirmed, but I'll probably be back at the Richmond Marathon in Richmond, Virginia. All right, so now we want to talk about why Japan is unique and different, some fun and quick facts from the book Things I Wish I Knew Before Going to Japan by Ken and Yuki Fukuyama. If you live in Japan and you know the culture really well and you disagree with one of these points,
take it up with the authors.
I was just about to say that. All right, so fun facts. Japanese customer service is the best in the world, according to this book. And I would say I haven't been everywhere in the world, but it is next level. I was really impressed. Number two, Japan has electronic toilets.
We could do a whole podcast about how nice the toilets are.
Yeah.
Heated seats, bidet, all sorts of features and functions and flush options.
We got to get one here at our house. Number three, vending machines sell just about anything from snacks to umbrellas to women's underwear. Number four, Kit Kats come in different flavors like corn and sake and banana and grape.
Yeah, we bought a bunch of different flavors to bring home for our two other boys. Yeah, there was a lot of fun flavors. Matcha, peach, what else? Strawberry.
Squid.
Cheesecake. No.
Number five, the Japanese consider black cats a sign of good fortune.
Which we do as well, since we have two black cats.
Yeah. Number six, you can drink beer anywhere, but you're not allowed to eat while walking around. Number seven, you can stay in a capsule hotel for less than $20 a night. But I couldn't talk Angie into doing it. She wanted something nicer.
It's literally just like almost like a coffin sized, maybe a little larger.
You
sleep
in
there and there's, you know, communal like showers, and can be a great option if you are trying to travel on the cheap.
Number eight, you don't see homeless people in the streets. Most homeless sleep in internet cafes. Number nine, mayonnaise is not for sandwiches in Japan. It is used for noodles, pancakes, potato chips, and ice cream.
Wow. Mayonnaise should not be used at all. I know people are going to want to fight me on that one, but...
Not a huge fan of mayonnaise, are you, Angie?
No.
Number 10, Japanese sometimes use full body umbrellas. It does rain a lot over there.
It's very practical.
Number 11, they have weird ice cream flavors like octopus, charcoal, and horse meat. Number 12, Japanese people have a long life on average. In fact, there are more than 50,000 people in Japan currently who are 100 years old.
Or more.
Yeah. Number 13, Japan has 6,800 islands.
Wow, that is amazing.
Number 14, the average train delay in Japan is 18 seconds.
We did notice everything was very punctual. Their public transportation is amazing.
Number 15, there are a lot of cat cafes where you can hang out and play with cats.
Not for free.
Yeah, we went to one, actually.
Yeah, it was fun because our oldest son obviously is a big cat lover like we are. And so went to one, and I also saw like puppy cafes too.
Yeah.
And I've heard there's like...
Hedgehog cafe.
All sorts of things, yeah.
They even have a cafe with owls. You just go and look at owls. Number 16, Japan has square watermelons. And number 17, the authors say, what makes Japan special is its culture, people, its fascinating landscapes, rich history. It's a land like no other, a land of honor, respect, innovation, and raw beauty. So after the Tokyo Marathon, Angie, what do we do?
The next day, we went on the bullet train to Kyoto.
And yeah, Kyoto is the ancient capital. So we stayed 3 nights in Kyoto. We went to the bamboo forest, went to some temples, and went to a monkey preserve where you can feed monkeys.
Yeah, you had to work to get there, though. It was like a hike up a mountain. It was a bit of a challenging climb, especially after having run a marathon, but definitely walking around a lot helps you recover more quickly. And, you know, it was still a little bit off season for tourist season. So even though there were large amounts of tourists in some areas, it, I'm sure, can get even more crowded. And we were a little bit early for the Japanese cherry blossoms. There were a few trees here and there that were bloomed out. But when we were in the mountains near Kyoto, you could just tell like how gorgeous it would be with everything in full bloom for spring.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's so many great hikes to be had over there. We also did the samurai experience where we dressed up as samurais and got to chop stuff with swords. That was pretty fun.
Well, not just random stuff. It was like a bamboo pole.
Yeah. Random stuff would have been a lot more fun, but
they're very sharp and dangerous, so it was a very controlled process.
It was. But we learned a lot about samurai culture. And then for lunch after that, we went to one of those conveyor belt sushi places where the sushi comes by on a plate and you just like pull it off the conveyor belt if you want it.
Yeah, that was awesome. Some of the best fresh sushi in the world, as one would expect.
Hope you enjoyed our race recap, the Tokyo Marathon. We definitely recommend it. Always love hearing from you. Send us a message on Instagram or Facebook or through our website. We have a contact form over there, marathontrainingacademy.com. Until next time, remember you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my-